Welcome to Zanzan. I have the pleasure tonight to have with me Mr. Vikram Shankar. Vikram, hi.
Hello there. How are you doing?
How are you, Vikram?
I am doing wonderful, man. Can't complain.
Okay, very good. So, Vikram Shankar is Silent Skies. Vikram Shankar is Redemption. Vikram Shankar is Lux Terminor. Vikram Shankar, for Tunisian people, is also Cartagot, because you made orchestration and keys in the last album of Cartagot.
Yes, I did. That was an absolute joy to do.
Yeah. So, we're going to speak about you as a musician, you as a keyboard player. We're going to speak about metal, progressive rock. We're going to speak about your presence in all the bands where you play. But just for the beginning, how did you meet with Tarek and Cartagot, Tarek Ben Sesi?
Well, that was all thanks to Timo, Timo Summers, who produced the album as well as playing the guitars on it and doing arrangement work and all of that. And yeah. Timo and I have gone back a few years now. I think maybe 2016 was when we first started speaking. And we began with... Basically, we just would collaborate very briefly with each other on things, you know, a YouTube video here. And he played a guitar solo on The Courage to Be by Lux Terminus, my album. So I've always been interested in working with Timo. I think he's a brilliant musician. I think he's one of the most underrated guitar players in all of rock and metal music. And he asked me to help out on this Cartagot album with primarily orchestrations, but also some synthesizer work. And we did this really cool version of the song Rebirth as well. That was like all orchestrals with a little bit of guitar at the end. So it turned into a really interesting collaboration that was, you know, all thanks to Timo welcoming me into the fold, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, Timo Summers, who plays in Cartagot and plays also in D-Lane and lots of bands. So, Vikram Shankar is also Silent Skies and also Redemption. And the common thing of Redemption and Silent Skies, it's obviously Tamed Edmonds from also Evergrey, but you don't play with Evergrey. Maybe one day.
I wouldn't say no, man. I wouldn't say no.
So, before speaking about this particular relationship that you got with Tom England, let's hear one of the songs of Silent Sky, if you want. What do you prefer, the clip of Distance or Solitude?
Why don't we do Solitude? This lead single, I think it's a good choice.
Let's go.
While our souls ride on heaven's vault. its test. Lost track of time, it's gone. It's lost because of reasons I can't explain. No one could explain. Alone in solitude and morning mist, and there's a cold that do persist. Osiris, offer peace where I lie. I catch a glimpse of Venus on its right, and just like that drifting satellite, all alone through the silent skies, all alone. And dead are the embers. What's left is this cold. All light here has faded, all left to rest. I lie on the meadows while our souls ride on heaven's vault behind the trees. Spirits
Wow, congratulations. Every time I hear this this song, I have the hair is dressed everywhere, you know. It's something, Is Silent Sky something about space? Space to the music, space to the keyboards, space to Tom's voice, giving space, giving time. Is it?
Well, thank you for your kind words. That means a lot. And really, I think, yeah, that's certainly part of it. I mean, for us, it's almost like, you know, it has to do with doing a lot with a little. And sometimes it's not necessarily a little. Some of the arrangements can actually be quite elaborate, but it's really about, you know, Tom and I are both known prior to this project for doing some quite bombastic, intense music. And with Silent Skies, you know, the whole point of it is that you can take a piano and a vocal and not dress it up too much beyond that, but a good song is a good song. And so, you know, there's definitely, the way we write is such that there is a lot of space between ideas and things are given time to grow. You know, we don't write particularly short songs, and that's just because, you know, everything needs to take its time and it needs to go at the pace that it needs to go. Which is why I was really glad actually that you played the whole song. I didn't know if you're going to be playing a little chunk of it or the whole thing, but I think it's important when you're digesting this music that you give it the time that it deserves. So, absolutely.
Hope that you too will make me a reclamation tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, oh, it's really, because, you know, preparing this interview, I was listening to Silent Skies, and I was also listening. You know, I saw the last the album that get out from Redemption. You know, with AFM Records, the live at Broke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw your contribution with Redemption. You know, and there's a lot of place for guitars, for riffs, for solo guitars, and little place for keyboards. You get to tell me I'm with the Redemption from 2 years now, from 2018. I can't take the whole place. But it was like, you know, the feeling that I had is with the Silent Skies, no guitars at all, nothing, just piano, keyboards, synthesizers, and Tom Englund's voice. Just to, it's for you something to, it's, how would say, it's for you, for, you know, make, showing what you know what to do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because throughout a lot of my life, I've played in bands, and you know, Redemption is, I guess, no exception. Where if you're a keyboard player playing in a band with guitars, I think inherently you are kind of second fiddle. And I actually have nothing wrong with that. I think everything has its place. And part of what makes Redemption so good and why fans are drawn to it is because the guitars are so powerful and the solos are so extravagant, and I think that's fantastic. I was a fan of Redemption before I joined the band, and I always loved that. So I have no interest in changing that. But at the same time, you know, I have enough to say that sometimes it's nice to have, you know, a space where I can say all these things. And Silent Skies and Lux Terminus are two vehicles in which I can do this, because Lux Terminus is extremely progressive jazz fusion, you know, with metal influence as well. And there are also no guitars in that project. It's keyboards, bass, and drums. So I can kind of go all over the place and do whatever the heck I want to do. And then in Silent Skies, I'm using just the piano with some embellishments. And in both of those cases, it's kind of like dealing with the confines, the constraints of, you know, these are my tools, the piano, the synthesizer, whatever. You know, how far can you go with that tool? And the amazing thing about the piano, and I think the reason why I played the piano all my life, is that you can say so much with the piano, and you can say very delicate things, you can say very intense things, So it's not just about the register, which goes very low to very high, but you know, the dynamics and the expression, and you can have sustaining things and percussive things. And I love that I have not one, but two projects in which I can showcase how much the piano and keyboard is capable of doing, which is really special. I think a lot of keyboard players don't get that. So yeah, you know, I'm really fortunate for that.
Yeah, and even for Tom, I think Silent Skies is a way for him to go singing in another register.
Yeah, very much so. That was actually conscious, because when he reached out to me in 2017, this light is really not wanting to cooperate. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
Part of what Tom wanted to do was he wanted to express a side of his voice that has always been there. But I think fans don't know that it's always been there, because he has a reputation of being this big power voice, and he's so good at that. But he's very sensitive, and he loves these kind of quieter dynamic things to sing, and he loves folk music and pop music and acoustic music, and just like, you know, he wanted to show that not only can he do those things, but he can do those things as well as anybody you want to put him against. So it was kind of nice for a fan of Tom's, because I've loved him for many years. It was really nice actually to watch him have the chance to show the world what he's got, because, you know, I think he deserves a lot more credit than he gets in the progressive and metal and rock communities.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that Tom Englund is an underrated voice, maybe a little bit, because when you hear him singing in that song, Solitude, we hear the feelings, we hear the emotion, we can listen to his heart singing, not only technique.
Yeah, and I would say he's underrated, perhaps for the reason that I think in metal and in rock, people really glorify a certain type of singing that's based on physical histrionics more than emotion. Like, how high can you sing, and how loud can you sing, and how long can you hold a note, and things like that. It's like almost like the Olympics for voice. And I respect that a lot, and I kind of grew up with that. But at the same time, you know, I don't think people appreciate enough how much true skill it takes to, you know, sing within maybe an octave as opposed to like three, and still say so much and like sing one word and your audience feels it, you know, right here. That's something that's a special gift, and I don't think any amount of like pure balls to the wall power is going to be able to compete with that. At least for me, I have my own tastes as a listener, and I know that not everyone may agree, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, I'm agree with you, and I think that you met Tom Englund before even joining Redemption, true?
Yeah, I joined Redemption through Tom. He kind of referred me, because we started work on Silent Skies in early 2017. And yeah, it was mid-late 2017 when I first met Nick Van Dyke, who's kind of the figurehead of Redemption. And Nick and Tom are old friends. I think they've known each other for 20 years or maybe longer. And it was, you know, Tom's recommendation, because Redemption didn't have a full-time keyboard player, and they haven't for a decade, I think. So, you know, Tom saw that there was this vacancy, and he knew what I was capable of, and he suggested that I could step into the fold. So really, the friendship and collaboration with Tom has led to a lot of very cool things that I would not have experienced otherwise. And it just goes to show that, you know, fate is such a special and unpredictable thing.
Yeah. And something you made an edit on your YouTube channel of one song with your contribution. So if you please, can we listen to it? It's Redemption Black.
Yeah, yeah, by all means.
Yeah, let's go. Mr. Vikram Shankar here with Redemption. So it's an edit that you made that's in your own in your YouTube channel. It's hey folks, here I am on Redemption. Listen to me, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's such an iconic song for Redemption fans. You know, people who follow the band for a long time. The vast majority of them actually would probably pick that, you know, unanimously as the best moment in Redemption's catalog. And, you know, it's a special one for me as well. And, you know, it has like four keyboard solos. So like, what's not to love, right? So, you know, it's been always very important to me as a fan that when I perform Black and White World, I do it justice because, you know, this is such an important song to so many people. So that was probably by far the most important moment of the performance for me, as far as just making sure that I was committing emotionally and technically, you know, exactly what needed to be said. So, you know, that was a really, really cool moment out of a really, really cool show full of really cool moments, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So tell me something. When we see you playing on stage, the keyboard is special. Usually, keyboard you put, you know, keyboard. I think like that, you know. But you, yeah, you put the keyboard. It's you let people see what you're. Is it for letting people see how you're playing, what you're playing on the notes?
Yeah. Why? I mean, basically, I wanted, to not to make it sound any, you know, more thought out than it is, because when I was in high school and I first started, I just wanted to look cool and different. And that was really, you know, basically all there was to it. But But there is a logic to it, and there are many great keyboard players in the last 20 years, like Jens Johansson of Stradivarius, for instance, who or Jan from Children of Bodom, who do this. And yeah, Derek Sherinian perhaps was one of the first. And you know, it serves a function. You know, it's not just that people can see you, which is really important, because I think that, you know, everyone can watch a guitar player's fingers and they can know that what they're hearing is being executed. They know that, you know, it's not on a backing tape or whatever. But I think with keyboards, it's very easy to hide back there, and a laptop does everything. And, you know, you're playing one or two notes and headbanging, and, you know, for some projects, that's actually, you know, that's the right solution for the performance. But I like doing a lot of things live and using backing solutions as minimally as possible. So I like people knowing that, you know, there's a certain amount of artistic engagement going on my part. And it's also, physically speaking, it is kind of ergonomic, because if your wrist is like this the whole time, then you're actually bending it in a kind of awkward way. Whereas if you let it fall with gravity, it actually practically makes more sense. You know, I think that it's really weird if you first try to do it, but I think a lot of players have found that it can actually be more comfortable. And then I added that spinning thing as well.
Yeah, I was going to say it. You know, you spin the keyboard left, right. It's because you can't go everywhere with your keyboard like a guitarist.
Exactly, because I have always loved playing guitar, and when I was younger, I played guitar in a few bands, and I was always like the showman. You know, like I was that guy who would run from like one side of the stage to the other and do all this crazy stuff. And whenever I was playing keyboards, I was always so frustrated that I was stuck in one place. And keytars exist, of course, but you know, I prefer playing on a workstation. You know, I feel like the big 88 key keyboard just feel more like organic instruments to me, you know, for me personally. So I used the spinning thing, which I got from Jordan Rudess of Dream Theater. It was one of my biggest influences as a keyboard player, but I haven't, to my knowledge, seen anybody who has an angled and rotating keyboard stand. Now, I'm sure they exist and I don't know of them, but to me, it was something fresh, and it just enabled me to like channel the physicality of my performances and go absolutely insane when I need to be, because that's really important to me. I love when I go to a show and I watch people go insane, and I know that like, they're not holding anything back. They're just, you know, putting it all out there on the stage. And even though I'm playing a keyboard, which most people would say is the nerdiest rock instrument, you know, I still want to leave it all out there on the stage. So it was just another tool to let me do that.
You got the option, you know, of the keyboard, guitar, you know.
No, there's all sorts of wacky stuff.
Look, you get. You get another option, like you know, the keyboard player of Rammstein, who on stage walks. He's got on the concert he works. You know, he makes his sport. You know, for 1 hour, 2 hours concert, and he's walking, and playing.
Dude, people got all sorts of very interesting solutions on how to emancipate the keyboard player, like the. I saw the keyboard player of Epica a couple of years ago, and he has his keyboards on rails, you know, like these hydraulic things that, and they go all the way around the stage riser. So he can just go like, you know, it's crazy, you know? And for me, I can't do that because I would be screwing up all the time. You know, I play too technical music for that to fly, I think, but.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, playing, playing progressive music, it's very, very hard, not easy music.
Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart, absolutely.
Yeah, and you also play guitar.
I do, yeah. And for me, I write on guitar. At the moment, I don't have any bands where I perform on guitar, and I'm content with that for the moment. But I like composing things on guitar, and for instance on Lux Terminus I do this. I'll come up with a riff on guitar, you know, and then I'll just play that riff on keyboards. And what that means is that I can write things that maybe other keyboard players wouldn't write, because, you know, with the way the guitar frets are shaped and everything in the tunings, it just lends itself to playing certain types of things. So I'll jam on the guitar and I'll write some sick riffs, and then I'll just play them on the piano. And then it's like, I have piano riffs that, you know, a lot of keyboard players would never do. So really anything I can do to be fresh is something that I'm interested in.
And in your YouTube channel last week, you downloaded a video of you playing guitar. So let's hear it. Let's see you.
Yeah, right on.
You like djent?
I do. I think that's one of the more exciting evolutions of metal playing in the last 10-15 years. And I think that people maybe don't understand how deep the influence of djent has permeated into other bands that don't call themselves djent, but you can hear the influence in the way that they write some of their guitar parts. I think it's really cool to watch the influence of basically a bunch of kids in their bedrooms, you know, influence international metal music.
Because there's a big polemic now about djent. Some say, no, it's not music. It's not an evolution. It's just a rhythm and that's it.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, a lot of new things are controversial, you know, and that's always been the case. And, you know, there's some people who are going to think that, you know, just because you're doing something syncopated, you know, it doesn't make it interesting. And that's totally fine. You know, it's no problem. But I think it's really cool when you hear, you know, actual, you know, people who are working in the field of music and they're listening to a Periphery or a Tesseract record and they're internalizing these things and then they're doing it in their own music, whether it's like a power metal album or a traditional progressive metal or melodic or whatever. So, you know, it's like there are things to be taken from pretty much every genre of not just metal, but of music in general. And I think my favorite musicians are the ones who are cool with borrowing from different aspects of music if it helps them say what they want to say.
But, djent, isn't it only a guitar thing? How can we play djent with keyboards?
It's funny you say that, because to me, and you know, everyone defines these things differently. And I think part of the thing that people, you know, kind of point and laugh at with djent is that, you know, even among people who say they play djent, they don't all necessarily agree on what it is, you know? So it's very easy to laugh at that. It's like, oh man, they don't even know what they're doing, sort of thing. But to me, djent is a style of modern metal where usually the guitars and the bass and the, you know, the kick and snare part of the drums, at least, are very tightly interlocked, playing certain types of rhythms. And usually it's like it's got a lot of short notes and then long notes and short notes, and they'll displace it, you know? So, you know, typically sounds like are we still connected? I got a phone call.
Yeah.
I don't know if
no.
I mess with something.
No, it's okay.
Right on.
Like, you say typically
Yeah, like a periphery riff is usually not just going to be just sound like, you know, they'll normally do a bunch of like with these kind of longer notes. So I found that very interesting as a piano player, because, you know, we can play staccato and held up notes just as much as a guitar can. So I took that style of, you know, longer notes and shorter notes playing percussively, often really low, like super low, aggressive sounding piano notes, sometimes with a little distortion as well. And kind of like seeing like, can I make some really heavy, chuggy stuff that's done on the piano? And that became a lot of the Lux Terminus sound. And there's a great piano player named Tigran Hamasyan. It's kind of like a jazz fusion, folky piano player. And I heard him do this 6-7 years ago. And he was one of the first people who really gave me the idea that you could take what you can call genti rhythms and apply them to the piano. So it's all over the Lux Terminus stuff. And we had a listening party on Reddit for our debut album. And one of the commentators called it plonk. So like guitars go gent, right? And piano players go plonk. So on Reddit, ever since then, Lux Terminus has been called plonk metal. So it's like, you know, really all these things are, is it's just words to describe how we hear certain types of music. And the guys in periphery don't necessarily call themselves gents. I think Misha Mansour just calls himself a progressive metal guy. So it's like, we only call it gent because it sounds different than Pain of Salvation or Queensryche. You know, so it's just a word that allows us to call this modern style something different from the older stuff. And I don't know. I love it. I'm totally on board with that. But maybe it's a product of my generation, you know. I have no allegiance to an older style. I kind of vibe with whatever is fun.
So there's Edgeless Vermin. Greetings from Atlanta.
Atlanta, the home of Prog Power USA, right on.
And there's Hedy Manoir who say, nice to see you with Kabea, Vikram.
Right on.
Nice to see you, Hedy. So if you got a question, come on, put a comment and I will ask them to Vikram. Vikram, yes. Shankar. A huge difference between the music of Silent Skies and the djent thing.
Yeah.
Nothing to, there's, you know, like you see, you know, it's from 0 to 100 dB. It's,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's just one of those things where I've always been interested in so many types of music. I mean, like for background, I only listened to Western classical music until I was maybe 12 years old. So yeah. Like nothing after 1915 was what I listened to. And then I heard, I guess it was like Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and music like this, and then Dream Theater and Iron Maiden. But at the same time, I was getting into Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock, and I was getting into Pendulum and Square Pusher. And it's like, people always told me that I had to pick, you know, like, okay, at a certain point, you're going to have to decide, I make music like Dream Theater, or I make music like Nightwish, and this is what you do. And I hated that concept because I get so bored if I only make one type of music. So what I've done is I've created a bunch of different projects. At the moment, I'm a full-time member in four bands. And they all sound different, and that enables me to say different parts of what I have to say in that project. And the advantage to that is that I don't have to start cross-pollinating. So Silent Skies doesn't have to turn gent, and Lux Terminus doesn't have to turn into extreme melodic death metal like my band Threads of Fate. It's like I can keep all these things separate so that each one can be as good as it can be. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of confusion that comes when one artist uses one name, but releases a bunch of different albums that all sound different. And then it's just like, what am I listening to? What am I getting myself into when I pre-order a new album? And then you pre-order, you receive it, and it's totally different from the last one, and you get pissed off and you never listen to the artist again. So to avoid that, I have all these different projects, because, you know, I love the Silent Sky stuff. It's probably one of the most truest to my soul projects that I have, you know. But it's like, I got to gent every now and then. I got to make something heavy. I got to make something dark. And I got to play a lot of notes, which you don't really do in Silent Skies. It's all about economy. So I can't really shred and be super technical in Silent Skies. And every now and then, you know, I want to say something that requires shredding. So I have all these projects so that I can say all these different things. And fans of one don't get super pissed off when I kind of dilute the nature of what makes the project special.
One thing is sure is all your projects are rock.
Yeah, I mean, no. Pretty much, yeah. There have been some exceptions, like the first EP I released in, 2017, was actually electronic, because I love electronic music. It was like drum and bass and a little bit of dubstep and things like that. But I kind of wanted to get that out of my system, because I know a lot of rock fans, they think that stuff is terrible. So I didn't want that going too much into the rock stuff I made. So I was like, I'll make an EP, and if people like this stuff, they can listen to it. And if not, they'll never have to hear me do that. But then I went on to make Lux Terminus, and all of a sudden these electronic influences started creeping in there, you know, all of a sudden. So it's like, I listen to all these different things, and they creep in there. Even if most of what I do is rock, every now and then you'll hear a jazz moment, and you'll hear a cinematic or orchestra classical moment, and it just keeps it fresh. And it means that I can always be me, because I don't think I would be me if I got rid of all that stuff. And I think the people who like what I do, they like that I do all these different things and I keep fresh. So it's just all about authenticity for me.
So, Henning Bertrand, say good playing. Yeah, Bertrand.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
And tell me, okay, Timo told you to help Cartagut for some keys and orchestration, but what did inspire you in Cartagut's music?
Well, I had listened to whatever the band had done before the Monster in Me album. I don't remember if it was an EP or a short album or whatever, but I found it on Spotify and I listened. And I've been following Timo for long enough that I'd keep seeing him post flying to Tunisia to play with Cartagut, and I'd be like, oh, I wonder what he's up to. So I'd listen to it, and I really enjoyed that it was, you know, perhaps on the surface level, it was like straight ahead, powerful, heavy metal. But there was a sense of, you know, there's some ambition here. There's some drama. There's some longer songs. And I really liked that there was some dynamics in there. It wasn't just straight up riffs for 40 minutes, you know? I mean, I love riffs, but it's nice to have that kind of light and shade in there. And I think the fact that they even had any keyboards and orchestra on the album at all shows that they're interested in light and shade, because there are tons of bands like them who would have just kept it to guitar and been like, you know, this is metal enough, we're happy. But it shows a lot in their musical maturity that they were like, even some subtle keyboards are going to add some depth to the music. So I think, you know, even before I even did a note of work for them, I was impressed just by the fact that a band like them wanted to add something fresh to their sound.
And how was the collaboration, and what was your contribution with Cartagut on their album, Monster in Me?
You cut out during the second half of that.
Oh, excuse me. connection. So what was the your contribution with the Cartagots in the Monster in Me? What did you give?
Yeah, well, Timo gave me the songs, and I think some of them had vocals, and some of them the vocals weren't recorded yet, but they had the guitars and bass and drums, and I could listen to them, and then by and large, that was all I was given. So I wasn't really given instructions of do this kind of thing here, do this kind of thing here, we want orchestra here, we don't want it here. I was just given the tracks, and I basically just went to town, and I recorded mainly orchestra parts. I kind of would separate my work into two halves. I would do the orchestral stuff, which was, you know, mainly in the vein of like maybe the Hans Zimmer Two Steps from Hell style of film scoring, mixed with a little bit of Nightwish, that kind of vibe. And then I did a lot of electronic stuff, so synthesizers, programming, you know, a little bit more on that actually modern electronic front. And I sent it all to them in all separated out so they could pick and choose what do they want to use, what actually fit the song, what was overkill, what didn't fit the vibe. And I didn't actually know what was going to be picked and what was going to be discarded. It kind of seemed that almost all of the orchestral stuff stuck, and a lot of the electronic stuff might have been a little bit too modern, which, you know, is totally cool because I didn't really know what exactly was going to be fitting the final project. And I like it that way, because that way I can just do whatever the heck I want, and then I'm totally unfettered. I can do my thing. And then I'd rather do too much, and then you take away, you know, what's excessive. So on every track but the last track or the bonus track, I just did that. I contributed the orchestra and synths on top of already existing songs with guitar, bass, drums, and all that. And then Timo told me that they wanted to do the song Rebirth, but just in an orchestral format, as kind of like a teaser, perhaps, of how these songs could sound if they were done in a different way, which was like a really cool challenge for me. So I just took the song, and very faithfully, pretty much with a one-to-one correspondence between like original chorus and my chorus, I just created this film score, modern film score version of Rebirth. And then a really cool touch at the end was we added Timo's solo from the original song, and I kind of remixed it to fit the orchestral vibe. And something that was really gratifying is I would see a bunch of reviews, and a ton of the reviews talked a lot about that final track and how it was so nice after hearing whatever, 6-7 songs of heavy metal to hear like the same song, unchanged, but just kind of dressed with slightly different clothes, can feel so different and can have such different appeal for different people. And it's like such a cool challenge to be able to do that, and so fulfilling that I think it actually reached some fresh ears, people who may not have listened to the original album but heard the remix, and it encouraged them to check out the rest of the album, which is, you know, the greatest compliment that I could receive for that project.
Yeah, I really like this song, The Rebirth. So, well, I told them when I hear it once, the first time, this can be a hit. Make it a video clip. Come on.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it's really, really cool song. And the vocal melodies are really nice as well. I have to say that all the vocals are really, really compelling. And it's one of those things where I have a love-hate relationship with really gruff voices, because a lot of times I lose the melody and I just hear some guy yelling at me. But I like harsh vocals. It's this kind of in-between range where a lot of times it doesn't really vibe with me. But I really like his vocals because he never loses the melody and he never loses the emotion. It just sounds really big and epic. So Yeah, I love that. I love what he did on that song and on every song, really. So, you know, I'm a big fan of all those guys, actually. And I hope one day we can play together. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, maybe in Tunisia one day.
I actually remember at some point we talked about playing some shows together. At least Timo mentioned it to me. Yeah. I don't know if that was ever actually seriously on the cards or if he was just throwing me a bone to make me happy. But Timo and I, we had discussed at some point I could play some shows with the band. And that would be really cool because, you know, they're subtle, the orchestral elements, but they are there. And I watched some live videos from the CD release show, for instance, where all the keyboards and stuff were on backing track. And I was actually really pleasantly surprised because I thought there were going to be like this really quiet undercurrent, but they were really using the orchestra to drive the performance. And it just sounded super dramatic and powerful because of that. So being able to do some of that live would be really awesome.
Yeah. I guess that when Timo told you first time he's going to Tunisia, you went to see where is Tunisia on the map.
No, actually, I'm a big... or at least I was a big history buff when I was younger.
Oh.
So the you know, the stories between the war, the Carthage wars and all that. I always knew that stuff because I was that kid in middle school who'd sit around and I'd read this stuff in history books because I was bored. So actually what was more than that, I was just super excited because I never thought I'd get a chance to work with a band that wasn't from the Americas or from Western Europe. So just like, yeah, I get to do something fresh with fresh people and they're doing such cool stuff. You know, it's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. I think you are one of 0.1% American that know about Tunisia and Carthage. Yeah. I maybe think that Hannibal is only Hannibal Lecter.
that's funny. Yeah, I don't know what it was about like those classical stories, but I was so much more interested in classical stories than anything else that my peers were consuming when I was in elementary and middle school, and everyone was watching these TV shows and everything, and they just, if I was watching TV, it was the History Channel. I was just that sort of person, and I guess the History Channel was more historical than it is now, maybe. But anyways, that's beside the point.
Yeah. So, Vikram, let's tell us, what are your projects now? What are the projects? What are you working on? How are you living this COVID coronavirus?
Yeah. So I have all of these bands, and I guess to most people that might seem like a full-time gig, but it's pretty far from a full-time gig because what I do on a day-to-day basis is I am a producer and keyboard player for other people for hire. So I'll either be recording keyboards and orchestral tracks for bands and artists or doing remixes, or I've been getting into the producing game a lot and doing mixing work for people, really trying to build that side of what I do up. So it's one of those things where I think a lot of people in the music world were really, their businesses took a huge hit with the pandemic, because if your business was performing live, it's gone, and you have to find other things to do, which is quite terrifying for a lot of people and quite daunting. But I was in a slightly different position because my business was never performing live. I mean, I performed live on occasion and I love performing live, but it was never my full-time occupation. So what happened was that the pandemic happened and all these musicians went into the studio, which is perfect for me because it's like, everyone's going into the studio. What do they need? They need session keyboards. They need producing work. That's what I'm here for. So really over the past year, I've been spending the vast majority of my time working for other people and doing a whole lot of cool projects, none of which I can talk about, conveniently enough, because none of them are announced or released. But, you know, I've been keeping busy that way, and I've still found time to write a lot of Redemption music. Nick Van Dyke and I have been working on the new Redemption album, so especially last year, we wrote a lot of music together. And that was cool because Redemption fans will know that Nick Van Dyke writes everything. You know, he doesn't really have a co-writer. He really never has. So, you know, he allowed me to contribute ideas, original demos, and entire songs even, which is something that is actually quite an honor. I don't take that lightly. But we've been super busy on that. I've found time to hammer away Lux Terminus ideas. And, you know, with the release of Silent Eyes in December, you know, we were very busy working on the release for that, because there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that's got to be done to make a release happen. And then the release happened, and now we're forging ahead on new music as if nothing ever happened. So it's like, it's busy times, and it's a mix of being very, very creative and then being very, very not creative, and but still working in an artistic framework, which is what I always want to do. You know, I always want to make sure that I'm doing something artistically fulfilling, even if it's not for myself. So the new year will present a number of releases, I hope. I have a solo piano album that I'm sitting on, just waiting for the right time to release. I think Silent Skies fans will enjoy it because it's very much in that vein, just without the vocals and without electronics. It's just the piano. And I'm playing a band called Threads of Fate as well that I think flies a little under the radar for a lot of people because there's not as much music released. But it's a little bit more on the extreme metal side, a mix between harsh vocals and clean vocals and orchestral parts in a very gothic, dark atmosphere, kind of more Insomnium type music, but with an even more dark gothic exterior over everything. And that new album's done. It should be coming out this year as well. And perhaps Redemption will come out this year if we play our cards right. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that may be coming out this year. So I should be a busy bee. And I'm quite grateful for that because I know that I'm really lucky. You know, I know that there are a lot of people right now in the music world who are struggling so much to not even have stuff to do, but have that internal drive to do anything. Because when you lose touring, it's just, you know, for so many people, that's what keeps you going. It's going in front of people and playing music, and you see the energy and the joy of the audience coming back at you. And, you know, it's really tough for musicians, many musicians, to keep forging ahead without that. So I think that listeners should pay attention to that, and they should be sympathetic to what their favorite artists are going through. Because even if you're a big artist, or what seems like a big artist, and you may think, okay, this guy's got it figured out, he's got a few million streams on Spotify, he should be having a great life. He's probably not. He's probably struggling just as much as, you know, this local guy who you think, you know, should be having so much more difficult of a time. So, you know, it's hard, and I have the most sympathy in the world for my colleagues who are, you know, just putting one foot in front of the other, trying to get through this thing, because it's really rough.
Yeah, of course. And one thing, when you being a session musician, you know, is something that helped you to go from a genre to another, not to be to play in only one style. You can play different, make different experiences. It's even ritual for you.
Yeah.
Musically,
That's it. That's exactly true, because I found that if I'm doing only one thing, one type of thing, I get stifled very quickly, and I get unfulfilled very quickly. And I think that's one of the trappings that a lot of full-time composers and people whose livings are made making their own music, something they might find right now, is without the touring experience and all the kind of out of studio time, and they're locked in the studio and all they have is themselves and their thoughts. You know, it's very easy to lose that drive or go crazy or anything like that. It can actually be quite a dangerous time. But being a session musician, it means that one day I may be working on one type of project and the next day I may be doing something completely different with a completely different skill set. And that's something that I was always working towards, because I never wanted to only be able to do one thing. I've always been kind of obsessive about learning the most different styles of playing and the most different production techniques and all these things that I could. So, you know, it's one of those times now where that exposure and that experience has been really, really important. And actually, if there are any artists listening who are really struggling with keeping their motivation, you know, I think one of the best things you can do for yourself is learn something new. And I don't even think, actually, now that I think about it, that this applies only to artists. I think everyday people going through their lives and the day-to-day of the work from home, 9 to 5, stuck in the office, you know, that can be so soul-sucking. And it was soul-sucking even before you were stuck at home in one confine, you know, in the prison of your home. But but now it's so much rougher for so many people. And I think a big way to combat that is to do something fresh. Even if it's not going to become your new career, learn a new skill, diversify in some way, get some new fresh experiences that you have to learn. You have to start as a beginner and cultivate through perseverance. And I think that's a great way to build your confidence and make sure that your mental faculties are staying sharp. So, you know, it's all about survival techniques, really, at this point, for the vast majority of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vikram. Thank you very much.
It was a real pleasure. Real pleasure. Yeah.
Me too. And I don't know what to say. So first of all, thank you very much. And I hope you the best for the future. Okay. And just remember, Silent Skies, the album, for who wants music that's cool, calm, with a lot of space and keyboards, and the Live of Redemption that is out from, I think, the summer, I think. It was the album went out August. In the summer, yeah. I think. Yeah, in August. Yeah, that's it. Vikram Shankar, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hey, likewise, man. Thank you for having me.
Zanzana, l'émission métal.